Hello, my name is Cheryl Cohen, and I'm the president of Arthritis Consumer Experts, or ACE. ACE provides education and training to people with arthritis. We also help to empower people living with all forms of arthritis to take control of their disease and to take action in healthcare and research decision making. I'm also a person living with rheumatoid arthritis. We're here today for this September 14th Joint Health Podcast with Dr. Kam Shojanya. Dr. Shojanya is going to talk to us today about treatment advances for inflammatory arthritis. He's a clinical associate professor at the Division of Rheumatology in the Department of Medicine at the University of British Columbia. He's also a research scientist at the Arthritis Research Centre of Canada, located in Vancouver, British Columbia. Dr. Shojanya's research specialty is the efficacy of different medications on the treatment of rheumatoid arthritis and other inflammatory types of arthritis. We're really thrilled to have someone of Dr. Shojanya's caliber with us today, again, to talk about treatment advances for inflammatory arthritis. This 30-minute program really is intended to provide you, the person with arthritis, or the public listener, with an overview of the various aspects of an evidence-based treatment plan for inflammatory arthritis. So welcome, Dr. Shojanya. We're really thrilled to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
I'm wondering if you can talk to us, I guess as a starting point, about an overall treatment plan for inflammatory arthritis. What are some of the components?
Well, the optimal therapy or treatment plan of arthritis really depends on the underlying, on the patient, whether this person has mild or severe disease, whether it's early in the course or late. So just to give an overview, I like to divide it into either non-drug therapy and drug therapy. Perhaps I'll start talk about non-drug therapy first. I think the most important thing, whether you're a newly diagnosed or someone with late rheumatoid arthritis, is to learn about it. Even if you have late disease, 10 or 20 years in duration, you'd be surprised, and you think you'd know a lot about it, you'd be surprised at what has happened in the past 5 years. So it doesn't really matter where you are. The more you know about the disease, the better you are. In fact, this was studied in a number of clinical trials looking at the effect of education on the course of rheumatoid arthritis. And we really see that people who know more about it do better no matter what.
Sort of that knowledge is power.
Exactly. Yeah. And also, the more you know about it, the less anxious you are. Yeah. When you know what's important to let your physicians know about, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So I think again, knowledge is very important. Other than
what about support?
Well, you know, it's important. If you're a single person living alone in a new city with rheumatoid arthritis, you're not going to do as well as someone who's got the support of family, friends, work, and a group of health professionals. So you're right. You need to have the support.
Yeah.
And you know, how do you manufacture that? That's something that is a good for discussion. But
mm-hmm.
I think part of that support is educating people around you about the disease as well.
Yeah, I know when I was first diagnosed with rheumatoid arthritis, I spent a lot of time and energy in those first number of months just telling people what the heck it was. And it was so foreign to them. They thought, oh, yeah, arthritis, I know all about it. But in reality, what they learned from me really turned sort of the light bulb on for them and helped them to better understand how they could help me. So I think that that's an important aspect for people listening today is to understand that support is important and that the education piece isn't just for you, it's for those all around you as well.
You're right. And
yeah.
I think educating the people closest to you improves their quality of life because I think they get a little depressed or upset and anxious as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
What are the other components?
Well, along with patient education and the non-drug components, the important one is exercise.
Mm.
It is extremely important to use exercise both to preserve joint function, preserve the strength of the muscles around the joints and to improve the general well-being and general health of the person. Because if you've been exercising regularly, then you get rheumatoid arthritis, and you stop exercising, you'll get problems just from that, aside from developing the rheumatoid arthritis. If you haven't been exercising and you get it, you're actually going to do a lot worse. So
having a higher general level of health or fitness, if you will,
yes,
in before you get an inflammatory arthritis is a good thing. And I guess that really speaks to the prevention aspect, although inflammatory arthritis, I understand, can't be prevented. There are things that perhaps we could do as patients that would prevent some of the downstream consequences.
That's right.
Of inflammatory arthritis if we're fitter.
You know, I was thinking recently when I was saying that we can't prevent inflammatory arthritis, but there actually is one thing we can do to prevent it. If you smoke, if you stop smoking, your chance of getting rheumatoid arthritis is a lot less. The chance of getting it is a lot higher. So you're right, we really can't prevent it, but there's something we can do, which is quit smoking. And actually, just to go a little further on that, if you do smoke and you get rheumatoid arthritis, if you quit, the disease severity will be a little less, and the medications will work better. Some don't work, which we could mention later, when you smoke. So that's only one we talked about, lifestyle. Smoking is one of the most important things.
Well, that's a very important thing to note. Thanks.
Exercise, what happens is pain and stiffness can lead you to not use the affected joint. So you can get contractures, which is loss of range, muscle atrophy, and the joint is actually less stable. So you need to exercise, but it's not just going out to the gym and working on that joint, because if it's inflamed, you can damage it. So you need the help of a physical therapist who knows about rheumatoid arthritis to help you with what exercises to do when. When it's inflamed, you do range of movement. Later on, when it's less inflamed, you can strengthen. Irregular aerobic exercise, such as walking, swimming, cycling, depending on the inflammation levels, can improve aerobic capacity, joint stability, muscle function, and overall pain control. In lots of pain studies, not in rheumatoid arthritis, but in general pain studies, aerobic exercise reduces pain levels.
That's fascinating, because I know it actually was not that long ago when people with inflammatory arthritis were diagnosed, they were told just basically to go and rest.
That's correct.
And in fact, it sort of flies in the face of our current knowledge now about these group of diseases.
What we do now, as opposed to just rest for a week, is we exercise and we have periods of rest between the exercise. Because, you know, when you do have a lot of inflammation, it's like having a bad flu, and you really need to take a 20-minute break. A short nap is perfectly fine, interspaced with the activity.
Okay. Now, when we look at these different aspects of a treatment plan, is it one size fits all? I know at the beginning of your remarks, Dr. Sharjani, you talked about the different stages of disease, and that you want to use different types of interventions at different times. I gather that's probably true for different ages and genders and life circumstances, that again, it's not a one size fits all.
That's correct. There's different types of people, and there's different types of rheumatoid arthritis. For example, you may have a milder course, more elderly onset, milder course versus a very severe course. The disease can go into long clinical remissions. You know, there's no doubt that about up to 10%, not a big number, but 10% of people with rheumatoid arthritis can have remissions lasting up to 30 years. So you can hope for that, but I wouldn't expect it happening.
Of all the people that get, let's say, rheumatoid arthritis or psoriatic arthritis or ankylosing spondylitis, sort of the three big categories of inflammatory arthritis, how many people can expect to go into a remission that is not drug-induced or medication-induced? So it shows up one day and then just, poof, goes away.
It's hard to tell, because most people who are on medications can achieve some type of remission for some time. So we don't see the people not on treatment. But I would guess that maybe 5%.
So a very
small number.
Maybe the
maximum of 10% without any treatment would go into a remission lasting more than a year. Okay. But even those people usually relapse. So we would, in going on in that, if, looking at the severity of disease, we classify it into mild, moderate, and severe, as, mm-hmm. as with most things. I could go into that.
Yeah, I think probably for our listeners, what is would be of interest is where along that spectrum then, if we're talking about sort of a holistic treatment plan, and you've touched on education and empowerment, support, certainly the importance of exercise. Obviously, the healthcare professional plays a big role in helping the person with the disease manage all of that. But probably most importantly, the health professional helps them deal with the issue of medications. And I think at our workshops across the country, Dr. Shojanya, and you know because you've spoken at many of them, medications, we can never answer enough questions about medications for inflammatory arthritis. And I'm wondering if you can just sort of bring us maybe into that topic with the view of mild, moderate to severe. When does a person need to consider medications? When does a rheumatologist start to think, I should put this person on a medication? Is it everyone? Is it everyone all the time? Is it, you know, and so we're just trying to find sort of our bearings here.
Well, I think before I answer that, I think I should just tell you that there are, you know, several classes of medications that we use. Some of them we can use once in a while, but one class, I think everybody with rheumatoid arthritis should be on this type of medication, and we call that a disease-modifying anti-rheumatic drug. This is a miscellaneous group of drugs that are termed slow-acting or disease-modifying just because they reduce the damage and progression of rheumatoid arthritis. And so everyone should be on one of these. And these can be quite gentle and mild to very strong and helpful. And so everyone should be on a DMARD. The other medications can be used as needed, typically. And those are what we hear about most on the television and from friends, and those are the anti-inflammatories. While those are helpful for inflammation and pain, they don't prevent damage long term. So to answer your question, I think the vast majority, I would say 95% of people with rheumatoid arthritis must be on a disease-modifying drug, and the other drugs are optional.
And that is because we don't know what causes these diseases, we don't know what cures them, so the idea, I know as a person living with the disease for about 17 years now, but for our listeners, the idea is to dial down the volume, so to speak, of the disease in view of the fact that we don't know how to get rid of it in entirety. We don't know what causes it, so we don't know what cures it. So these disease-modifying medications, they suppress then the disease activity. Is that the idea?
That's correct. It suppresses the disease activity, slows down immensely the damage and pain and swelling and stiffness. So people feel, you could feel almost back to normal or back to normal, depending on the stage of the disease, when you use these disease-modifying drugs. So they're very important. They're our best treatment, and there are different types of disease-modifying drugs. Yes, they don't cure it, though. It's interesting. We are now looking at ways to, we call it remission when you feel perfectly well, no inflammation and no inflamed joints or blood tests showing inflammation. But usually remission is induced by medications and you need to stay on the medications. We're now looking at clinical trials, looking at drug-free remissions. So using earlier onset of these disease, certain types of disease-modifying drugs. So I can talk about that later.
Yeah, that's fascinating research. So when we look at, we think about DMARDs, or we've heard, you know, briefly about the role of a disease-modifying anti-rheumatic drug, or DMARD, is the acronym that we commonly hear in the arthritis community. Are there others? Are they used on their own? Are they used in combination? How do we use medications? I know that as a person living with the disease myself, when I first walked in and I was given, you know, a couple of different prescriptions, I'm thinking, you know, why do I have to take all of this? So that's it's right. Hard for us patients sometimes to understand why we need to take one or two or often three. Can you maybe touch on that a little bit?
The disease-modifying drugs are generally very slow-acting, so it takes several months for them to start working. So if you came in, for example, with moderate disease activity, I would put you on a disease-modifying drug, for example, methotrexate, one of our most common ones, and I'd tell you that, well, this is most likely going to slow down the progression, make you feel better, but it's going to take several months. In the meantime, for your symptoms to make you feel better, I can give you either an anti-inflammatory like ibuprofen, or I can give you a more potent corticosteroid such as prednisone short term, and we call that bridging therapy, a bridge from now until the time the disease-modifying drug starts to work. Then in that case, I may need to give you a medicine to protect your bones from the prednisone. So I may give you just a short-term course of a bisphosphonate, such as etidronate or alendronate. Mm-hmm. So there you go. You're already at three pills, and you're getting anxious. Why do I have to take a fistful of pills mm-hmm. now? And then, but the good news is that when the methotrexate starts working, you get off of the anti-inflammatory, the prednisone, and the other medication. And the aim is to just get you on one disease-modifying drug. And the methotrexate being once a week is not that intrusive into your life.
So it's a bit of a front-end load, if you will.
That's right.
You start with maybe several, and as the disease is starting to be more under control, then there are opportunities to take fewer or lower doses.
That's correct. Okay. Front-end load is a good term. The other thing is we're almost moving towards treating it like a cancer.
Hmm.
So diagnose it early and hit it hard at the beginning, knowing that later on, the harder you treat at the beginning, it's so much easier to treat later on, 4, 5, or 10 years down the road. It seems to change the nature of the disease.
So treating it early, getting it under control right away is quite critical to the person living with the disease.
And that's been shown in a number of studies looking at that more aggressive early approach versus and we call it a go low, go slow approach. And the aggressive early approach is so much better long term. Whereas when you have the disease, you're afraid of the medications. Obviously, everyone would be if you've never been on anything. And you'd rather go low and go slow. But you don't know that you're probably doing yourself a disservice later on, and you'll regret it 4 years down the road.
It's counterintuitive almost, in fact, because as a society, we are medication phobic, if you will. I know I go to birthday parties or I'm out walking with friends and someone will say, oh, I had a terrible headache. And someone else will say, oh, well, you know, did you take some Tylenol? And they'll say, oh, no, I don't take drugs. And I think this is really hard for people, particularly with inflammatory arthritis, you know, rheumatoid arthritis, ankylosing spondylitis, psoriatic arthritis, because we're having to take things every day or weekly or, you know, every 6 to 8 weeks, whatever the case may be.
That's right.
And it's really hard because society has somehow said, oh, well, you're somehow weak. And I think this is a really important point, I think, to underscore for listeners, that it's not, you know, you're having to take these medications. It's not something you did to yourself or that someone did to you. It's just, it's a genetic and an environmental mishap in your body that has created a process that is only controllable through medications and the other components of the treatment plan that you described earlier, such as exercise and support and education. If we're going to talk about then medications we're trying to get our head around what is the best sort of plan in terms of medications for inflammatory arthritis, You talked about the DMARDs. They're not perfect. A lot of them have been around for a long time. So what's new? Like, if we were to think about what is the state of the art for people with, let's say, moderate to severe disease, where the disease is really having a significant impact on their life, what would they be taking? What is a person like that, Dr. Shojania, going to be prescribed by a rheumatologist?
If you have moderate, so let's cut out the mild disease for mm-hmm. now. And if you have moderate to severe rheumatoid arthritis, this is impacting your life immensely.
In what ways? Describe. How will it affect us?
It's affecting the way when you wake up in the morning, your general well-being, your severe fatigue, hours of stiffness in the morning, unable to move well, fatigue by mid-afternoon. It's very unlikely you're holding down a job at this point. Your spouse and kids are wondering why you're not doing stuff with them. Your home activities are falling off. So it's really affecting every part of your life. So you really, at this point, the people with moderate to severe disease need to be on one of our best DMARDs, which is methotrexate. So you'd have already been on that at this point. And we would increase the dose. We would go to injectable methotrexate, which is just an injection under the skin, similar to insulin, mm-hmm. once a week. If that doesn't work, then we really should go on to combination therapy. Combination of methotrexate. I think the best treatment at this point after that is a combination of methotrexate and one of the new biologic agents or biologic DMARDs. The ones available at the moment are three anti-TNF biologics, etanercept or Enbrel, adalimumab, that's a hard one to say, but the other name for it is Humira, and infliximab, which is Remicade. Now, added to these three anti-TNF DMARDs are two new ones called rituximab or Rituxan, mm-hmm. Which is an anti-B-cell, and abatacept, the other name for it, is Orencia.
So there are five, it sounds like, of these sort of latest, greatest, the state of the art. Tell us what a biologic is. This is one of the most commonly asked questions at our rheumatoid arthritis plan to win workshops. Okay. So describe a biologic and describe for us how they work and why they are gaining sort of popularity in the treatment armamentarium.
The biologics, first of all, I have to tell you about cytokines. Cytokines mediate many aspects of the immune function. They are produced by active immune cells, and these cytokines enhance or inhibit the immune response. So these are cytokines. They're little messengers in our body that enhance or inhibit the immune response. So one of the most important cytokines is tumor necrosis factor, or
right.
TNF.
Right.
That usually is in very high levels in people with active rheumatoid arthritis. So the anti-TNF cytokines are the three I mentioned, simply reduce the amount of circulating TNF in the body and thereby down-regulates the immune system. And that way you have less inflammation.
Okay.
The difference is the traditional DMARDs that we used previously and still do, but mm-hmm. the traditional DMARDs also reduce TNF as part of a global suppression of the immune system. Also, they are chemical treatments, chemical medications that have to be broken down and have some side effects in that regard, perhaps on the liver or with rashes and the kidneys. So these new biologic or anti-cytokine DMARDs have much less in the way of those nuisance side effects, and they target one area of the immune system rather than a global suppression.
Okay, so the old, just to make this really clear in my head then, the older drugs, the DMARDs, traditional, let's call them DMARDs, we're not quite sure how they act specifically. We just know they lower the immune system activity by suppressing it.
That's right.
The biologic DMARDs, the newer class of treatments, are very targeted. We know exactly how they work. But neither of these categories obviously are free from side effects. And we can maybe talk about that in a minute, but just to distinguish for our listener what the traditional DMARDs, the difference between the way they act and the biologic. So is that a fair characterization?
That's correct.
Okay, great. So in terms of the biologic DMARDs, what can one, not talking about any one specifically, but for a person who is in really bad shape, that I'm guessing that's who those therapies are for, people who have moderate to severe disease.
That's correct. Yeah.
Okay.
So the side effects of these biologic, for example, we'll take the anti-TNF cytokines. Those are the ones we're used that are used at the moment. While the other two are now available, most people are still not using them in high numbers in practice because they just became available in Canada.
Right.
In the last couple of months.
I understand from one of our previous joint health podcast speakers that the reason more biologics are coming forward to Health Canada and to the marketplace, and why more are even still in development, it's because RA is different in every person. So for these two newer ones, I guess as rheumatologists such as yourself begin to use them, you begin to figure out what their place is, so to speak, in the armamentarium, which weapon to use against which disease, really.
That's correct. I've been using these two newer biologics for a few years now in clinical trials, and I can tell you they're very good.
Yeah.
But I don't know which person is going to respond to which of these biologics, because most of us with rheumatoid will respond to one of them, but I can't tell you as an individual that one is going to be better for you rather than another. So it's really a toss-up.
It's a bit of trial and error.
It's trial and error, and you have to try one and see how well it works and how you tolerate it. And then if that doesn't work, we simply just try another one.
And in terms of making a choice, whether we're talking about a traditional DMARD and a biologic DMARD, between the patient and yourself, obviously you have to make a decision. So I know for myself, as a person living with rheumatoid arthritis, when I have to make a therapy change, we talk about, what's going on in my life. I know that obviously pregnancy is an issue.
That's correct.
Where you live, what kind of coverage, drug reimbursement coverage you may or may not have, whether you have private or public, extended health mm-hmm. benefits or not.
I mean, what province you live in.
It's very, very complicated in terms of the patient and the physician being able to make a decision about what the right therapy is. But I'm guessing, as it is for myself, it really should be a decision between the rheumatologist and the person living with the disease.
That's exactly right. Some of them have a longer half-life or length of time in the body. Some are shorter. Some are intravenous, very intermittently. And some are injection under the skin, which you would do yourself. So it's all these come into play, and it's really a co-decision.
Yeah.
I give my patients homework. Here are the three that we're going to talk about next time. Bring in your spouse or someone, and we'll talk about it.
Yeah, I think that's great advice. I wish more rheumatologists would do that. I think it's important for your profession to engage people living with the disease in meaningful conversations around the choices they have in front of them, because those choices have benefits for sure.
Mm-hmm.
They also have consequences or potential consequences. And so it's important to have really thorough dialogue around all of that, so that people, when they walk out of your office, that they actually go and get the prescription filled.
That's right.
I know I've had been given lots of prescriptions in my time as a patient, and I kind of walk out, and if I don't believe in it, I'm probably not going to get it filled. So I say to the listeners living with inflammatory arthritis, get comfortable with your rheumatologist and the kinds of choices you're having to make, particularly around medications, because your belief in the diagnosis, your belief in your rheumatologist, in their ability to treat you and treat you well, and your belief in the prescription being handed to you really does have an impact on how well you do. And that's certainly true when we look at the research literature on this area. In terms of the combination therapies, then, if we were to look at what is being done across, so let's look beyond our borders here, Dr. Shojanya, look beyond Canada. Do Canadian rheumatologists, are we treating in the same way that American rheumatologists are treating, or Swiss or French rheumatologists? I mean, where does Canada sit in terms of treatment? Are we getting really good treatment here?
Well, you know, it's hard to know in the I don't know the numbers perfectly well, but I know that in the United States, a lot more, and perhaps about 40% of people with rheumatoid arthritis are getting the anti-cytokine biologics.
Okay.
In Europe, I think the number is a lot less, and I think in Canada we're perhaps in between as usual.
So why is that?
I think it's a number of factors. Provincial reimbursement is a factor. In British Columbia, for example, you have to fail five regular disease-modifying drugs before you're allowed to go on to a biologic, including combinations. So that takes a long time, and I think some patients get discouraged jumping through the hoops. It's harder in some provinces and easier in some provinces. For example, Quebec and Ontario, it's easier. And there are other limitations. And, for example, the co-payment in BC depends on how much money you made in the last year, and it could be quite prohibitive, up to $10,000 a year. Out of your own pocket, and you may have made more last year, and you just can't afford $10,000 this year, or $5,000. So there's co-payments, there's fear. Perhaps some of the rheumatologists are a bit more conservative. They may not present the case as well for getting on a biologic. So there are a number of factors putting us at around 10 to 15% of people with rheumatoid arthritis are on a biologic. Mm.
Interesting. It's a very complicated world in which we live when we talk about what is provided to us by the healthcare system and what is not. And we know there are certainly great inequities for people mm-hmm. with arthritis. And I know there are many groups, ACE among them, and the Canadian Rheumatology Association, which you're a member of, working hard at trying to level the playing field, so to speak, in terms of access to medications. In wrapping up our conversation, what are you excited about? Where have we come from and where we're at now since you've been a rheumatologist?
Since I've been a rheumatologist 11 years ago, we've come from a go-low, go-slow approach where we see lots of damage in people, lots of work disability, pain, and resignation to a approach where we are aggressive at the beginning and we see dramatic and outstanding results to the point where we're now saying, well, let's put this in remission and let's get people off drugs. So, right now I'm saying let's put this in remission and you're going to have to stay on these medications, but we can manage that. And I'm going to a point where we can say, let's put this in remission and get you off pills. Next will be let's do a gene profile on you and see which of these drugs is going to be best for you. So we won't have that toss up, like we'll try this one first. And then further after that, we're doing, some gene therapy studies are looking very promising. So we'll give you a gene that will fight this disease or put it into remission. So that's where we're going. So we went from chemical drugs to biologics or sort of antibodies and receptors to next is going to be gene therapy and targeted therapy.
Wow. It's exciting.
Yes.
I think these kinds of notions weren't even around when I was first diagnosed 17 years ago. So I think if there's any time to be sort of optimistic, now's the time.
That's correct.
Right. Thank you so much, Dr. Shojani. We're really indebted to you for your time and energy and your great care for people with inflammatory arthritis.
Thank you.
And we hope that you'll come back and talk to us again.
Be delighted.
Thank you. And thanks to you, our Joint Health Podcast audience, for listening. As with all of ACE's programs and services, please keep in mind that the information provided in Joint Health Podcast is not medical advice, and ACE does not brand or promote any product or company. The information provided is to help you better understand arthritis and help you talk to your own rheumatologist or healthcare provider to make the best treatment decisions for yourself. Again, thank you for listening.